What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to Tour Life. We're out here today on the grounds of USDGC, getting ready to go tomorrow. You got myself and Yuli as always. Yuli, how's it feeling to be out here?
Oh, Winthrop University.
We're back.
It's nice. I looked at the weather. I think this might be the nicest week we've had for the USDGC in a long time.
Beautiful
weather.
Shred fest.
Yeah, beautiful weather every single day. The course is looking in great condition. No changes to note. Couple OB lines got a little tighter, maybe. That's about it.
Yeah, we're out here. We're going to have some players kind of roll through as they're finishing their practice rounds and kind of see how they're feeling going into the final major of the year. We're going to be talking about the Heiser Club Championships as well that went down this past week. We have our deep preview of all the things that will be going down this week at USDGC. Ken Climo is back, so we're going to be talking a lot about how he's going to be involved in this week. We've got the 2024 North American Disc Golf Pro Tour schedule release. Emphasis on North American. We're going to break that all down. And then some potential more trophy trolling. I don't know. I thought we were done. We're not done. More trophy trolling to get into.
Trolling. I like that.
Before we get into anything, I guess right now, we got Ezra here off. He's finishing up his final round. Ezra, jump in. You're going to have to like, kind of get into like a deep squat here.
Oh, you can sit? I don't squat.
Just hold it, yeah.
I can pull that back. All right, so you just finished up hole five, finishing up your final practice round here. How's the game feeling?
Feels good. First of all, I talked to you today after you got done practicing, and you said he was so packed you just quit after hole one, went to the field, got some practice in that way.
Yes.
I teed off like 35 minutes ago. Nobody's out here. So I might be the first and last guest of the show tonight.
Uh-oh. There's a good chance that maybe no one else is playing because there was some threats, I guess you could say, about the players meeting tonight. I think there was mentioned that if you don't show up to the players meeting, your spot will be given to someone else. That was not the case. So I think maybe a lot of people went out this morning, specifically around the time of 10:30 a.m. And that's
tough.
When the course was packed.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Not mandatory, though.
It's not mandatory anymore.
So.
But
they always threaten. Here's the thing with tournament directors that is hilarious. They say, if you don't show up, you're done. And I always say, like, what if I'm flying in night of?
Right.
Oh.
I can't just play?
That is true.
You're out, bud. Fly on.
Come on.
Jump back on the plane.
That is a good usage of an excuse. Is like, hey, I jumped on the PJ, got here in the morning. What are you going to do?
Call the cops.
What are the expectations going into this final major of the year? What's on the game plan here?
I guess high. I mean, I've been practicing a lot. My season has taken a bit of a dip late in the season, unfortunately, but I'm hoping that has passed and this is going to be kind of a steep.
Do you think that's because of like the course changes? Like it gets
I was
going to
say a lot of woods.
That definitely adds to it for sure. But I can also tell that just my throws haven't been as dialed in as they were in the first like 75% of the season.
Sure.
So
what finish out here would you be happy with?
I want to win the event. I think it was 2020. I think my first time playing this event after like 25 holes, I was like, I think I was either tied for the lead or in the lead, and then I got to hole 13, which used to be that hole 888.
Yeah.
Took like a 12 on it, and that it, you know. So hopefully, I kind of want to chase that top spot.
Is there any like different strategy that you're taking into this event? Because I feel like this is one of the few events of the year that actual gameplay, course management, those things matter. How you're going to play a certain hole can be the difference. We're going to get into it a little bit, but like one hole, for example, the way Gannon played it versus the way Nicklaus played it was essentially the deciding factor of who ended up winning. So any game changes as of how you're going to play certain holes out here?
Yeah, there's definitely some holes that I'm not going to be as aggressive on, kind of just play for par and just kind of take the medicine. Some of these holes you can just blow up on, and I've seen it happen. Obviously, it's happened to me, so it's like that can kind of ruin an entire event. So hopefully just avoid those, take the pause on those holes, and then try to attack the rest of them. But a lot of times just not getting bogeys is more important than getting a birdie.
Some would say the biggest collapse they've ever seen was last year doubles battle against Yuli and Big Germ on hole 12.
No.
We proceeded to throw, I believe, six shots. OB, any comments on that?
From me? Well, from Yuli.
No, for no, what do you mean?
I can give one. Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, that was tough. It was just I think we were in the lead at that point.
They were falling
all
apart.
All dreams just collapsed.
The video was just going to be an absolute disaster on the back nine because they were pouting, and we tried to save the video.
That's what it was. Yeah,
that's all we can say.
But here's the thing, I didn't hear anybody call out a rematch. Which is surprising to me because
doubles was kind of dead
when you guys got destroyed last year at the USCGC. I figured this year we were getting a call like, "Hey, show up this time," boom, 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 and that didn't happen.
We'll have to see if the people want a rematch. Doubles was kind of off the menu list this year.
Yeah.
We might have to bring it back because it seems like some people want it more. So
we did doubles with you guys at Music City this year.
We did
split
do that.
Teams.
On Jomez.
How'd that, oh, that's right.
How yeah, that was how split that, team.
How'd that feel for you guys?
I pulled out of the tournament because of it.
Oh.
Ooh. Yeah. I was just like, I can't.
Just didn't, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Bad vibes. Yeah. Didn't want that. Yeah.
Wasn't going my way.
All right. Last question I have for you, as you can get back to your practice.
Sounds good.
What is your thoughts on this course? Is this a place that, you know, we're in the 25th year of the USCGC. Would you like to see another 25 years out here? Or is this a course that might be kind of past its prime and on its way out?
No. I think this is one of the best courses on tour still. So 25 more yards for sure. This is usually a course they always keep making adjustments and changes to make it better. This year they haven't really made any changes, but it's already so solid. So that's why it probably didn't need as many changes. There's still a few things I'd probably like to see different going forward. But I like this course. I think it's one of the best. It views super well. It's tough with the OB. You got to play smart. So I think this should stay on tour for sure.
Yeah, and that relationship that it's US Disc Golf, right? Is
yep.
the term that or the company that actually runs this event. That relationship that they have with the university is a vital one.
Yeah.
And all I'm going to say is I did see some university officials driving around on a golf cart, and there was some chatter with some sort of USCGC officials about potentially a piece of plastic on the golf cart being broken, and fingers were being pointed.
Oh, no.
So we may or may not be here next year.
Was it you? That's what we're asking. Did you do that?
Are you trying to sabotage this event?
I love this event. USCGC would not be the same if it was a different course, I don't think.
It's a good point.
I feel like a lot of the reason this tournament is the way it is because of the 25-year history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a lot of tournaments within
not
with this
only
much,
that,
like,
but when you think about the finish of this course, there's no place like it. It's the most famous finish that you'll ever have. It's hole 17 is just so iconic. It'd be so sad if we saw that go.
Yeah. Or if it was like hole 13.
12. Yeah, it'd be tough to like see it duplicated. You know what I mean? Somewhere else to get like that feeling coming up, you know, and having to put it on the island to get your spot.
All right. Well, Ezra, we wish you all good luck and have a fun week out there. I'll see you back at the Airbnb.
Yes, sir.
Have a
good week, man.
Try not to ruin any more golf carts.
All right. The riffraff is rolling in here.
What is that?
It is hot out there.
I think someone's... Well, we changed the... I'm the only one that's getting blasted by the sun right now.
You can pull it off.
You can pull it towards you. Like. Yeah, there you go. All right, we got the 2022 USDGC champion here, Gannon Burr. Gannon, how you feeling? What's been up? What's new?
Throwing a lot more backhands than I usually would because my forehand doesn't feel good right now.
Mm.
Rough, a little rough, but I tried like 3 over today in a scoring round, so not feeling great. But I think when tournament comes around, it'll iron out. So.
Why do I feel like whenever you say I'm struggling in practice, the tournament starts and then you just
guys,
go
can't
hot
make any
fire.
Putts.
Just
can't make any putts out there.
It's because it like pushes me to focus, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Is this forehand a serious issue, or is this something that you feel like tomorrow you can start throwing and be like, oh, it's back, I'm good?
It just feels like it's kind of spraying everywhere. Like I like miss my angle. It's coming out like a little wobbly. But I'm still throwing it on 17 for sure. Like, probably 11's upshot for sure. There's a decent amount of holes I'm still throwing it no matter what. It's just, like, on 8, I've been going forehand in the past. I think I'm going to go roller this time on the second shot. So, just stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. Nice little changes. Do you feel like the course, are you happy with kind of the changes that we saw this year, which were very minimal? Or do you feel like maybe they could have done a little bit more? Or do you think the course is kind of like good where it's at and we don't really need to mess around with it anymore?
The course is good, but it could be better. two and three, I don't think are good changes. I know that those happened actually 2 years ago, or well, for last year's USDGC. I enjoyed the old par four, and then the new hole. I've talked to pretty much a lot of every player just doesn't like it because there's not a ton of score separation. Because if you don't throw not even just a good position drive, but a super far drive, you're not even going to have a chance to get within probably 80 feet, maybe even, you know. And it's a downhill putt, and then you can run those, go a little bit long. So people will be laying those putts up anyway. So, I'd like to see the old 1-4 come back. I thought those were a great starting stretch. I don't mind the current hole four. It's really tight, obviously, which isn't bad. But, I think 1-4 to start was one of the best 1-4s we've ever played.
There's only been a handful of guys that have actually won this tournament back-to-back. And by a handful, I mean there's only been one, and his name is Ken Climo.
Will kind of won twice.
No.
John Key does not count.
He does, though.
Why does he not count?
Because he got a handicap.
Wait, what? I don't know this story. You this don't? Was going to be something that I was going to ask about, because that was the only name on that list.
He doesn't count.
So wait, what's the story there?
It was ratings-based. You had to beat, you got a set amount of strokes or something.
It wasn't real. It was like an 880 guy won the USDGC.
Yeah. And he played above his rating, and that's why he won.
Okay, so Will's got an asterisk. Basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not his fault, but, you know.
So you'd be among the likes of Ken Climo and Will Schustrick as being the only ones to ever go back-to-back at a tournament like this. What would that mean to you?
It proved that, last year wasn't a fluke. I think USDGC is really hard to win at, but if you break every hole down, a lot of the par fours, you just pick your landing zones and pick the shot shape you want. A lot of it's execution based though, so it's really hard to play four clean rounds out here. Even with Ricky last year, he was kind of destroying everyone through the first two rounds, but had just a four over front nine round three and immediately took him out of the tournament. So it's definitely there's holes hole six, hole seven that are just you got to throw a good shot. There's not much really to it. You just got to throw a good shot, and if you don't, you're going to get punished.
Yeah, I think it has a good mixture of those execution shots of where you need to, like you said, you step up to the tee pad, not too much decision-making to be made, and then you got holes like hole 10, holes like hole 12, and obviously 17 about how aggressive you want to be. There's a lot of holes down the stretch, especially on the back nine, that give that decision making, and it should be kind of interesting. I think, like Yuli was saying, the finishing stretch here, do you want to just kind of walk us through final round last year, how much different, you've won many tournaments, you've also been in contention at many tournaments. How much different is the stretch, the final stretch at this course versus other courses?
I mean, yeah, just like what I said, you really can't be off or you won't win. I'll just start with hole 18. It's you have to throw two. Obviously, your drive, you can throw either further. A lot of people go forehand and get way up there, but that's a pro shot into the green. You just have to throw a good shot. There's no a mediocre shot will give you a par. It's you need to either, it's a birdie or a bogey. And so there's not really one hole where you can throw bad and then still get a clean score. 14 might be the only one. There's a lot of room to the right and short, so you can kind of just, if you're out of position, you're 50 to 60 feet, you probably just lay that up for par.
Like you did last year?
Yeah, like I did last year. especially if it gets a little windy out here. Today was pretty windy, and it immediately makes the course, so much harder. Because a lot of the holes out here, like I said, is execution-based at, a very high level. So holes like hole 10, 11, 12, that stretch right there, 13, of those kind of, pretty tough par fours. Or, 10's not really tough, but a lot of people are going for the eagle. It just makes those holes so much harder. And when they go from, holes that you're trying to birdie, hole 12 today was almost impossible with how much headwind we had.
Ooh. Yeah, the weather as of right now shows 5 to 6 miles per hour, so it doesn't look like it's going to be too much of an issue.
What is it like right now?
I don't know.
I feel like it got to 15 out there. Yeah. Like on the back.
7 or 8 right now.
Yeah. On the back side, it's pretty open. I think I like to say the wind's more dense out here for some reason. It feels like if you have a headwind on a hole a par four, it just feels like it plays so much further because you can't get that extra. A lot of these landing zones are on the edge of a really good shot when there's no wind. So when you have wind or headwind, especially on 11 and 12, it makes those like tee shots so much harder. I mean, Gavin Babcock, there's no slouch in the distance compartment, and he threw a bomb today, and it was like he didn't quite get over the OB on 12, and it's like 480, but I mean, headwind just slows it down real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, I don't trust any weatherman at all. Yeah. The weathermen have been really wrong all season for me. So it'll be interesting if the wind ends up picking up, because in practice, you guys, obviously you said today, but I was out here earlier this morning, no wind. It'll be interesting to see kind of how scores change, because a lot of us didn't practice the course this week in any sorts of wind. And I think that, you know, a lot of decision making will come kind of to that. So
I think, yeah, like a lot of those like stroke and distance holes. Yeah. So like, I mean, simple as like you go be on six, you go to the drop zone. If you run that putt and you go be again, you're re-putting, and then you basically just throw away two strokes to the field for no reason. And same thing with hole 10 is really tough. That's a hole where, like, unless there's a crazy headwind, I'm going for it, because I'm really comfortable from the drop zone. But if I were to like lay up left, I'm not quite as comfortable. And if you go be on your second shot, if you lay it up for the birdie, you're then playing for bogey instead of for par, and you're just re-throwing. Hole 12 has killed people in the past. A lot of huge numbers. I put with Emerson when he took a 14, and it felt like
shout out Emerson.
Yeah. shout out, you know. I'm playing, but yeah, I mean, it felt like he didn't throw one bad shot. Every shot was like a foot OB, but that's what USCGC does to you. It's breaking down holes. A lot of players, it's kind of a blessing you might not be able to reach certain holes, because then you're kind of forced to play for par in a way. But Yules, you're probably playing hole 12 for par.
Always.
Yep. And you're probably not going to lose too many strokes. You might gain strokes to the field, honestly.
I usually do. I've seen so many people get to that hole and take big time numbers. And back in the day, it was a little better scoring separation, because they call it a par five, which induced a lot of people really
to go for it.
Going over and going for it. And now being a par four, it's not that bad to take a par.
Yeah, I'm a fan of, a lot of people say the par doesn't change the course, but it actually does in a way.
Yeah.
Like with hole 10 being a par four, I'm going for it every time, because that two down on one hole is so huge.
Yeah.
It feels like you're doing so much for your round, especially out here.
Do you think if they've ever made that a par three, it would induce more people going for it or less?
It's a weird argument, because I don't know. I would
love to see that case study, though. I'd be fascinated.
I'd be fascinated, because I don't know. I almost don't know if I
just call hole one a par five.
I don't know.
It's just like start missing the mandatory.
That was 1 year we played Belton, where it was like a 386 par five. Par five. And like people were just getting albatross.
I'm in the club
twice, I think.
I got albatross, and then
I'm in the club.
Then
I'm in
the albatross club. All right.
And then the next year they changed it to a par three.
Three.
Yeah. Or they changed. It's just a par three.
Well, here you go. We saw a couple people get two, so this is what we're gonna do now. It'll be interesting kind of see how it all plays out this year. We got a lot of people that are obviously eager and fighting for winning that last major. You've got Isaac Robinson, who, my gosh, I don't hate his chances out here. He's already got two this year.
Might as well get another one.
And it's like a perfect his landing zones are like perfect. Nice out
he's
here.
He's just good. Okay.
No.
The idea of like certain courses suiting him. He's just good at
like
this.
Literally every hole suits his shot shape. Like six, like slight Anheuser, overstable out of the hand.
Yep.
That suits mine as well. Pretty solid. But like, I think actually in terms of like, a lot of people don't see me and Isaac as pretty similar players. But I feel like we do, especially when I don't throw many forehands. We just throw like 400 foot mids and overstable FX twos, and that's kind of how we break down holes. I feel like sometimes, obviously, he pretty much almost always throws backhand. But I think we both try to play a pretty similar game plan out here and just keep it in bounds. That's literally all it takes. I think Drew Gibson 1 year through would be like 25 times and got fourth place.
Shout out.
That's an anomaly.
All the shout outs. All
that's
the shout
outs. Anomaly.
That's nuts.
You throw out of bounds 25 times anywhere, you're done.
Yeah.
Drew's that was crazy.
It's very impressive. But it's how you play the holes. It's like, you know, if you're going that aggressive, you're probably also getting a lot of birdies, but you're obviously taking a lot of bogeys. Like, I think I'd probably prefer to be on the side of just play clean and get a couple birdies. Yeah. I'm more of like a
less,
you know,
stressful.
Yeah, I'm more of like an 8 birdies, 1 bogey guy to shoot a nice 7 instead of like 4 bogeys and 11 birdies.
All right, we're going to run through a few things here. So slightly surprised that feature cards, we mentioned the feature card. The other one is Eagle, Niklas, Chris Dickerson, Calvin Heimberg. Surprised that they didn't put Will on there. And I wonder if they did ask him if he wanted to be on feature card. Okay. I wonder if he – can I move a little bit, Silas, since we're going solo here? Do you have any insight on why
I'm pissed.
Will?
I'm pissed. Not because Will's not on there, but there's a tradition here at the United States Disc Golf Championship that the amateur world champion plays with the defending champion, and that's not happening this year. That's been going on since I started.
Who was the – do you know who that was?
It was a kid who just walked by. I forgot his name. Mulder? Is that his name? Mulder? Oh. Something Mulder.
They decided to stop that tradition
this year? Oh, no, he's a United States Disc Golf Champion. I'm not sure who the amateur world champion is, but maybe he's not here. Maybe that's why.
Okay.
But that person gets an invite, and then they play with the previous champion.
Yeah, I like that. First round, that makes sense. To me, it's just, you know, I think Will, he's won this event three times, 2010, 2012, 2014. The last time he played this event was in 2021, where he finished 89th place. But it does feel like he's been putting in a lot more work on his game from what I've seen him kind of on social media. He's also one of those names that when disc golf did get its big boom the last couple years, a lot of people never got to see Will, and they just see a number next to his name and then just think like, oh, this guy's not good. I was never able to watch him, obviously, in person. I've seen him in videos. I've heard from yourself and others just how good this guy was. I think it would have been a real treat for a lot of people to see him on lead card or on feature card, and it's a little bit of a bummer that they ended up not putting on there. So I don't know if they asked him and he said no, because obviously that's his decision. But I think we would have liked to have seen him on there.
I agree.
Okay, a few course changes I want to roll through here real quickly. Hole 7, they have an elevated basket this year, maybe by 3 feet, or not elevated basket, elevated tee pad, like 3 feet or so, but it's encompassed in this horseshoe. So I think that's going to be a really cool atmosphere. Hopefully they have a camera shooting back towards the crowd. I think that would be an incredible shot. Hole 3, they did change the hazard on the left to now, I believe, OB, which is not going to be that massive of a change. Hole 13, there is a short pin. So that is that par 4 where we throw over the huge mound. We're still doing everything the same, but two of the days we are now playing a pin that's just on the other side of the trees. So you're going to see some people kind of throw like a forehand into there. Really tight green. Can cause some trouble too, because if you go early, you're not going to save your par from that. And then hole 9, we have our Christmas trees are back. The gaps feel way bigger. I think the trees are a little bit smaller this year than the ones they had last year.
They didn't grow.
They didn't grow at all. And the gaps seem to be a lot bigger. I don't know if Silas can throw up for our YouTube people, if he can throw up a art rendering, I guess you can say, of what someone thought. I'll show you, Yuli. This is what someone thought it should be, is the USA, which is like an artwork piece. Which actually looks, I don't know. Is that better than the Christmas trees? I don't know. I also made a tweet about the Christmas trees. Did I save that somewhere? I don't know if I put that on here. Oh, this is probably the tweet. Yeah. Did I just cut it off? I might have cut it off. So I made a tweet, which I thought was interesting. And maybe I have to like put hash or do like the slash S. Because everyone was coming after me for complaining, and my tweet was just like, this is the hole I look forward to every year because I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily really complaining about it. I was just saying, like, I'm excited to see what they do on hole 9 every year.
Yeah.
One year we got spider webs on there, spooky. That was kind of cool.
Kind of scary.
Obviously, we had mozzarella sticks one year. So definitely was not a complaining tweet by any means. It was more just a legit, like, I look forward to seeing that hole every year. So we had Gannon on. I wanted to give this stat out real quick. Hole 10 was a huge, he talked about it a little bit. Hole 10 was a huge decider, stroke swings. Because you had Gannon, who went for it all four rounds last year, ended up shooting 6 under for the hole. Niklas ended up playing for birdies, so he laid up all four rounds. He got all four birdies, but that was a 2-stroke swing just on the decision making, and he ended up taking Niklas down by a stroke. So right there, that hole was the deciding factor in winning and losing. And I'm curious to hear what your perspective is on it. On what your strategy is on that hole. How are you going to play hole 10 this year, the drivable par 4?
Mine's simple. Tailwind, I go. Anything else, I don't.
So easy. Does it? You don't care if you have birdied every single hole. You're playing it that way no matter what.
Right. If it's completely calm, the landing zone for me is it's right at the cusp of making it in.
Okay.
So if I throw a good shot, I'm barely making it in if I do.
So you want that tailwind just to give you that little tailwind extra 15 feet, 20 feet.
Yeah, 30 foot buffer every single year, and then I feel super comfortable getting on the island, and it's not worth it to me to go for it, you know, taking par when I know that that birdie shot is pretty easy.
Makes a lot of sense.
Another thing with Gannon and Nicklaus is it does have to do with how you're playing in the round as well. I really think that. Well, because what if you come at 5 straight birdies and then you birdie that one? Your momentum's good. You're going, you're going through the motions. And
well, let me tell you what Calvin said, because okay. I thought this was interesting. He's playing it. This is how he's playing it. If he's playing lights out, if he gets there and he's 7 under through nine, he's going. If he's playing and he's like a dud, he's like even par at that point, he's going. And if he's having like a moderate round, 3 under, 4 under, he's laying up. I thought that was fascinating. Hmm. Of where it's like, that's how he plays that hole, which I think is very interesting.
All I remember is the torrential downpour that year, and the teepad.
It's like 6 inches of the water was completely covered, or the teepad was completely covered with water. He's wearing that yellow polo
that's
like
drenched
down to his knees now because it's so wet. And
that was insane.
That was an insane shot. Nico LoCastro's. This is his 500th event. 500. Most famous known for this course would be his albatross that he got back in 2019 on hole 13 when it was playing across the street, and it was actually the par 5. He does a little jump off the tree. Top comment, though, because I saw a lot of people posting about it being his 500th event. Top comment, think of how many more he could have played if he'd just hurry up. I mean, that's clever.
That's hilarious.
That's clever. Yeah. Like we said, Ken Climo is getting a lot more involved in this tournament. When we interviewed him a few months back, he talked about how he wanted to get more involved. He's won this event 5 times. I don't see someone that you could put in the booth that would be better than Ken Climo.
No.
And I'm very excited. He's going to be joining the booth all coverage this year. Very excited for that. And we kind of mentioned it a little bit talking to Dave about like the skill set. I watched this highlight they put out. Did you see this? The 10 hole playoff between him and Barry back in 2003?
One of the most famous playoffs ever. I've seen that 1,000 times. That was one of the only DVDs you could get.
For anyone out there that's like saying like if Ken Climo was playing in this era, he would get waxed, please watch this clip.
Yeah.
Please go back and watch this 10-hole clip between him and Barry. It was very eye-opening at just how good he was.
Yep.
He was so dang good. That's very fun. Good watch. I think it's on like Disc Golf Networks or Disc Golf Pro Tours, Twitter, Instagram, and all that fun stuff. Like we said, Skins match going down this Friday. If you're in the area, check it out. Who from this list we're showing right now, this is the winner. It's the winner circle. This was put up. There's a list of past champions. You have Ken Climo, obviously not playing. He's won it 5 times. 3 times you have Barry Schultz, Will Schustrick, Paul McBeth. Will is coming back from all his injuries. Paul's not playing. And then 1 time you had Felberg, Nate Doss, Nico, Steve Brinster, Jeremy Colling, Nate Sexton, James Conrad, Chris Dickerson, Gannon Burr. Are you taking Gannon Burr as the most likely on this list of past champions to win?
Yes.
That's your number one?
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to throw a sneaky one in there. I'm throwing James Conrad. Okay. Sneaky. Saw him today. Liked it. Liked really? What I saw. Liked what I saw. Just going to say I liked what I saw. You guys want to bounce on? Do you want to do like the three-headed dragon, all 3 of you guys? Or you want to take turns? Whatever. You guys decide. Obviously, we have tons of questions. This is tour life. What do you think we do on here?
Hey, we do have 30 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to be quick. I might be going solo, guys, for a little bit because I have other stuff to talk about. But Yuli's got to bounce here because he's actually going to players' meeting. He's a good. First off, are you going to the players' meeting?
I am not.
Here, just hold. If you want to hold that, so you don't have to lean in.
I'm not. I have a little dinner I have to go to.
That's fine. We did hear at one point that if you did not show up, you're going. Your spot was going to be taken, but that's not true. It is mandatory.
Well, good. I'm safe.
Okay. So first off, I want to ask.
Adam Hammes. By the way.
Oh, yeah. For our listeners, sorry, Adam's joining us here. Distance contest. Thoughts? This year, how did that go for you?
It didn't go well for me. I haven't thrown that hard in so long. So when I went into it, I was like, all right, here we go. And I just didn't throw any good shots.
Did you beat Ezra?
No, I don't think so. I think my furthest one was maybe 570, which is still a good throw, but
still solid.
When I got there, I had a later tee time for the distance, and when I got there, there were some young kids that had already thrown like 670. I was like, that's tough to beat.
Yeah, it's the distance contest is getting to the point of where it's going to be really impressive because I think there's going to be a lot of people that are like focusing on that.
Yes.
Similar to David Wiggins. There was some stat that said Wiggins has not finished outside of first or second
ever
at any distance contest
since he was 10.
Yeah, he's the king. He is the king of distance. It is hard to beat him. He actually had to make his last spoiler a little bit. His That's fifth fine. Throw in the semifinals to get into the finals. All four of his first ones went OB, and the last one got him in, and then he went on.
Clutch
stuff.
You'll find out later.
Yeah, impressive stuff. All right, how are you feeling this week? How's the game? What's the mind feeling like going into the last major of the year?
I'm feeling good. Got a little refresher at home. Back. First 2 days of practice were a little shaky. Today was a lot better. Started to find some consistency. Putts seem to be pretty good right now. And, I don't know. Like I said, we're all a little tired at this point. So we all got to dig deep and then focus up. The biggest thing for me out here, and I think everyone can take a little note, is when you're out of position, you have to play for par. Once you get out of position, you start forcing birdies is when you really get in trouble and those big numbers start to come. So just tell myself that before every shot and should be good.
Are you going a lot of power forehands out here?
Not so many right now. Sidearm kind of hurts a little bit to throw a little bit with the elbow. Mm. So I'm trying to rely on the backhand a little bit more. And the sidearm just hasn't been great all season for me. There's been a couple times where it shined, so I think the backhand will probably be the star of the show for me this week, and then the sidearm will come out for more of the placement shots that don't need to go as far.
Nice. How are you playing hole 10?
10, 10, 10.
Par 4, drivable.
Usually how I play that hole is if I'm frustrated going into it, I go for it. If I'm playing okay, then I lay up.
It's fascinating how so many people have different ideas of how to play it.
There's a good chance I'll be laying up on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. Expectations. What's a good tournament for you, and what's a bad one?
I'd like to cash. Top 20 would be the goal. Cash, I'd be happy with cashing here. It's not easy to cash here. I know it's ridiculous to say that for, my caliber of player, but that's the truth here. I mean, it can easily go wrong. It can easily go pretty good. So the goal is cashing, and then anything after that's a bonus.
Dropped to, is there a name for it? The jersey that you just dropped, the blue and yellow one?
It's a play on the Milwaukee Brewers City Connect jerseys. Go Brewers tonight. We took a little bit of a hard loss last night. I know Anthony's standing right behind the camera, smiling, and it pains me, but I'm faithful to win tonight. So go Brewers.
There you go. All right. Adam, good luck this week. Thanks for stopping by. Appreciate
Thank you, boys.
Brother.
Appreciate it.
All right. Next up. Who wants to go? Gooseman? All right. We got Gooseman joining us now. Coming in. I was told by your agent to not bring up the story of your biking adventures, so I will not be talking about your biking adventures. So I will abide by that. But tournament here, disc golf. How are we feeling? How's the game looking?
I'm feeling pretty good. I don't know. It's always kind of up in the air. MVP. I was feeling like pretty bad, and then I played like one of my best tournaments. So like, I think it'd go anyway. But the drives are feeling really good. Staying in bounds is going to be super important. So I think I've got a good chance if I can, keep the drives in the fairway.
Did playing skins, that's an interesting one. Some people decide I want to do it. Some people decide, I don't really want to do it this week. How is playing the skins match this week? Has that helped your kind of confidence having a competitive round of disc golf already under your belt?
Well, yeah, it was a big confidence boost, got to say. I was playing really well, threw a lot of really good drives out there. And top it off, got to take it to my rival.
Yes. Yeah. We were curious of if they decide to set the Gooseman versus Nicholas, because right after we talked about it.
He gave it the okay?
No, I'm saying like that was, he was thrown up against Nicholas.
I feel like
it might have happened because of him calling him out on the last tour life.
Have you talked to him about it though?
I asked him if he watches Tour Life, and he said every now and then, and that's all I said.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know.
He might have not gotten around the episode yet. Mm-hmm. Good question. Always like expectations. What are you feeling? What's the goal kind of this week?
Like Adam said, I think cashing is a really good thing here. I think I missed cash last 2 years, maybe. So I'm not sure I've ever cashed here.
Storyline, has Gooseman ever cashed at USCGC?
I can't remember. But
I think we know the answer.
Do we? If you can't remember, we'll leave it up to that.
So, I don't know. For me, it's just like I would love to be in a position where I've got a chance, you know, to do something nice the last round. So if I can play like a pretty consistent first three rounds, keep myself somewhere in the tournament still to that point, that would be like ideal for me. And then the last round, I might go big and I might lose it all right there. But at least I gave myself that chance to actually go for an aggressive round at the end.
Yeah.
Love to hear it.
Okay.
All right. Gooseman, appreciate you, brother. Good luck this week.
Appreciate it.
All right. Last but not least, we got AB joining us. This was the snap decision. He didn't have you in the top three, Fellberg, this is. He didn't have you in his top three picks. But then as soon as he was describing the type of player that would succeed out here, Yuli threw your name out, and immediately he dropped someone and added you in. What does it feel to have the stamp of approval from a past champion here, Dave Fellberg?
I mean, Fellberg is one of the GOATs, man. I had to go up to him and shake his hand today and just say what up to him. I love the guy. He's hilarious, and I'm pumped that he's rooting for me.
Nice. The last two majors, you've been in positions to put yourself in a chance to win. What would it mean to, you know, third time's a charm, whatever you want to say, what does it mean to take this one down?
I mean, I've been in contention so many times this year, and I just feel like every time I get closer and closer, so just winning this tournament would be the icing on the cake for the season.
Yeah, no, true. Any thoughts on like the finishing stretch here? Because I think you can kind of look a little bit towards Worlds is a little bit different, obviously, with Fox Run, but the finishing stretch here is in some ways kind of similar to the European Open, where you have like that island green on 17. Hole 18 is a very tricky par 4. You can get trouble off the tee. Mm-hmm. Same with the European Open. What are your thoughts on how you're going to attack, you know, late down the stretch to say you're in contention? How are you going to attack those holes coming down?
I just got to stay inside of my own head. That's pretty much it. I know the distance of hole 17, so I feel pretty confident and dialed with that shot. 18 is very similar, so that's going to be interesting.
You going forehand or backhand?
I'm going to throw sidearm zone.
Sidearm, yeah. Okay. Zone, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So are you trying to land in that like little, there's like those two kind of orange feathery things right in the fairway?
Yeah,
where it's
exactly.
Like flat? Mm-hmm. Trying to land right in that spot? Okay, interesting. Gotcha. Nice.
And then, yeah, there's a lot of similar shots out here to European Open. It's like kind of a very similar course, so I'm just pumped, keeping my sidearm. I just got to keep that good. It's been struggling and messing me up. And my finger, I hurt it pretty bad at Maple Hill. It split open and then got almost last place. It was awesome.
Oh, you got to get that liquid glue on there.
I know. I've been super gluing
it. Is it healed?
Well, look at it.
It was healed and then I resplit it, but now I'm gluing it shut, so it actually helps out.
That's one way to do it. Are we going to see a Dark Horse caddy on your bag? On your bag this?
My father, my dad's gonna caddy for me. He's coming out.
How many times has he done that?
Last time he caddied for me was Worlds last year.
Okay.
So he's done it a lot. He's been caddying for me since I was a little kid playing Worlds. So this will probably be like his sixth Worlds on my bag. So I'm pumped. I'm ready to go.
Also, shout out to AB's jerseys. I saw a clip. I don't know who it was. He was playing with Mason Ford, and Mason posted it. He was wearing your
mini AB.
Is that who it is?
That's what he calls it.
Yeah, mini AB at Ace Hole 7.
Yeah,
it was sick.
Oh,
really? It was sick. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
Shout out to that kid, and shout out to your jerseys. Pick them up on teamdiscraft.com.
Yes, sir. Thank
Sweet.
You.
All right, good luck this week, AB.
Perfect.
Take it easy,
good
brother.
Good luck to you guys.
Go D-backs.
Yes, sir.
Answer backs. Lot of baseball talk on this this podcast this week. All right, Yuli's got about 20 minutes, so we're going to try to run through a few more topics before he goes. And if we don't get through it all, you guys will just be able to hear me talk for the last whatever together. So we talked about the John Key thing. I thought that was an interesting, very fascinating. I don't know if a lot of people knew about that. Obviously, this tournament is one to be the experimental tournament.
Yeah.
And the fact that they did, was it still major?
Yeah.
Is he a major?
He's a major champion.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, that was – how did they let that happen?
It was a big controversy, man. I think – I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but oh, well, I'll say it. I'm pretty sure because of that one move, that's the reason Kayla Visca doesn't play this tournament.
Wow.
Like, a lot of us – like, okay. I didn't go. I didn't agree with it. Best tournament we play all year, and then all of a sudden it was a handicap-based tournament, and it was a – it was a sad thing to me. I'm glad it's back, and it was a weird three-year stretch. So we went like hazard rule.
Yep, brand new.
To where we just threw wherever you wanted, and then there was no OB anywhere. We went from that to, I believe it was we went from handicap to hazard rule to stroke and distance. Three-year stretch. It was bonkers.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Trying to figure it out. Well, we're in a good spot now, so maybe that experimentation needed to happen for us to be where we are today. But, yeah, that was wild just looking at the last list, and I'm like, you know how, like, they do some of those, like, pick the one thing out of this that doesn't belong? And it's like, all right, who's that guy?
Hey, but he got the job done.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, hats off to him. Okay, question here. This is a really good one. Goose actually ended up just leaving, but he made a really good point. On Monday, they had the qualifier out here, and they've done it different ways, all sorts of ways, right? They did it one year where you could literally miss the Mando on hole one, turn right around, and repay the entry fee and start over. And you could just keep going as many times as you wanted. And obviously that generated a lot of money. Where does that money go? We don't know. But
it goes into the payout.
Okay. I didn't know if they had made that announcement or not. What are your feelings on having the qualifier on the same course? Not just with USCGC, but in general, should qualifiers be on the actual course you're playing the tournament on?
I don't think so, honestly. I think they're not. For us to get in the tournament, they are not on the same course.
That was Goose's point, is we don't, all of us qualified on a different course to play here. So I think that's actually a fair point.
Yeah, a Monday qualifier beforehand to shut down the course from practice is absolutely mind-blowing to me, and it has been ever since this tournament has started. With that being said, the qualifying has changed drastically from year to year. It used to be, like you said, you could miss the Mando on hole one, hand another $25 and then move along.
Yeah.
You could stop, you could throw all your discs on hole five, stop. I saw a lot of people play hole one, loop around to seven, head right up, play the seven, loop all day long.
Just to suit the loop.
Until they got, you know, 3-4 under and then they kept going. I thought that was actually fun.
If you did that on, like, on a Saturday, I think people would show up to that.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting event to show up to.
No, absolutely. And that's what I was going to get to. I think like 2-3 weeks before having the qualifier and maybe having it as a tournament, like a 3-day tournament.
Ooh.
To where, you know, it was an actual qualifier. You go in, you play 3 rounds, and then the top 5 or maybe even the top 10 get in the tournament. Is a pretty smart thing to do. I also think that with a limited field like this, it doesn't have to be. It's a U.S. Open. It should be open to whoever qualifies. So eventually, I think having throw pink here is good, but we have the what is it?
The U.S. Women's Disc Golf Championship.
Yeah. We have that great tournament. I don't think we have to have throw pink here.
Yeah, honestly. You're almost saying like a flip-flop. They have their major that's there. We have – MPO has their major that's
exactly
there.
And then we can get a lot more players in, a lot more qualifiers, deeper field.
Yep. Okay.
Why do I always mess that up? The U.S.
Because there's 18 letters.
Yeah, there is.
Way too many letters.
WUSDGC. Something. Is that right?
Yeah. You just remember to add in the DG because it's always DG. You always got to have disc golf in
got
there.
It.
Okay. Slight debacle that I want to talk about. Funny story. So we get up to hole one. We're about to play our doubles match, which was against Gannon and Gannon and Gavin. They're rooting for their guy, Randon, who's like in the mix, right?
Yep.
And so they're looking at it. And when you walk up to hole one, they've got the big screen right there that shows you all the scores and stuff. And if you go all the way down to hole 18 on the official score is listed. This is for the qualifying round. The official score is listed as a par 3, 318 feet. And so there's some, you know, officials there, and we're like, hey, like, this is a problem. Like, this is an issue. And the guy's response, first off, was so funny because he, like, looked at us dead, super serious, and was like, everyone knows it's not 318 feet, hole 18.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're missing the whole thing. If I'm playing and I'm looking at my score and I see that one under is what I need to get in, and I am one under going into hole 18, I am thinking I just need to par this hole and I'm in. No, you don't. You need to birdie this hole.
Yeah.
Because the par is wrong.
Right.
And so I don't think I went and looked back at all the scores. I don't think it ended up actually
mattering,
mm-hmm. which is really good. But the idea at the time, there was people out on the course. The idea was you could theoretically have someone that have a 30-foot death putt.
Yeah.
Look at the scores and be like, oh, I can just lay up, tap in for par, and I'm in. And they tap in for par, they get a bogey, and they drop, and they miss it. So I just thought that was a fun little story of a swing and a miss, and then obviously it didn't matter, so
yeah.
Thank God. But, man, let's get these qualifiers locked in here a little bit. Make sure. All right. Last thing probably for you, Yuli, before you have to bounce out. I want to talk about the 2024 Disc Golf Pro Tour schedule. Big announcement just came out. I think they announced it at a great time, right before the final major. You've got tons of people that are interested in disc golf, paying attention. Great time for the announcement. Here are the big changes. We've got 18 Disc Golf Pro Tour events in the United States next season, four of which will be Disc Golf Pro Tour Plus events, two events, which will be GMC and Maple Hill. Those will be playoff events, and then we have the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship as well. Silver Series, as far as we know right now, are gone. Don't exist anymore. Gone. Jeff Spring mentioned in the statement, he said the 2024 season schedule is about making the best events in the world even better while delivering our best geographical route for ease of travel, touring travel. We're focusing on elevating 18 of North America's most prominent and loved events to a higher level, not just for players, but also fans, as we cultivate an even better experience both on-site and online. What this tells me, Yuli, and correct me if I'm wrong here, what this tells me is they basically cut the fat. They basically looked at what events do we make money at, what events do we not make money at. And they're like, we are going to put all our eggs and focus all everything in these events and try to continue to grow these events. And the ones that just aren't making money, we just can't keep dragging them on.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like is happening here.
No, I think that is what's going on. And I think that... I think it's a good thing, but I do think there needs to be a separate tour for people to be able to get tour cards and things like that, because how are other players going to be able to,
yes,
to get there?
So we are still waiting on the announcement for the Euro Tour. So when that first came out, I was like, what the heck? Like, they put all this effort into creating this big European tour and now it's gone. They did mention that there is going to be an announcement. So we'll see if the PCS still exists. We'll see if all these other silver events still exist and what they're even called. Because they kind of let it open to where maybe no silver events exist in the United States, but they could, I guess, rope-a-dope us and have silver events,
sure,
in Europe. And then what you mentioned, they are planning on having a qualifying series. So they said that some U.S. silver events from previous seasons will be included in a Disc Golf Pro Tour qualifying series that will allow players an additional opportunity to earn their tour card for the following season. Now, the main word here that I do not like is additional opportunity. I believe if you have a tour card and you're able, if you have a tour card, you're able to play in every tour event.
Yep.
I don't believe you should have an additional opportunity outside of that to gain your tour card. I think players that don't have tour cards, that are going to be very hard for them to get into these events, and now they have these other qualifying events that they can get into, I think they should only be competing against those people.
What I think is this. I think that there should be a certain amount of tour cards given each year.
Yep. Okay.
I think there should be qualifying events to get into certain tournaments so that you can have the opportunity to play in every single event if you qualify Monday before, however they do it. Another thing, though, I also think that the players on tour who have your tour card should be able to, if you make the tour championships, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
If you make the tour championships, you qualify for the next year,
mm-hmm.
I think, or maybe it's 2-year exemption or something like that. It should be really, really difficult to get a tour card.
Yep.
Really difficult.
Which it's starting to get harder and harder.
It is. But I also think that there has to be opportunity for players to get into the qualifier and then somehow make a tour card for the next season.
Yep. I like, and I think someone sent, one of our listeners sent this in as an idea of kind of off of the Premier League or like the football leagues over in Europe of where you kind of get regulated. I kind of like that idea of where, you know, every year the bottom 10 guys lose their tour card and the top 10 guys on this qualifying series gain a tour card.
Yeah.
And you have this like kind of cycle on the bottom. I don't hate that idea. But I do want to say I got a few more things to talk about with this, but I really want to do more of a deep dive on the actual tour next year, go through event to event,
yeah.
Talk about it. We'll do that next week because this week was kind of jam-packed with stuff. So we'll go more deep dive if you're curious on our thoughts on the tour and what that all looks like. We'll do that next week. But a few other things I want to say. We are starting at the Florida Open, which is the Grand Canyon course that's owned by Paul McBeth and Dylan Cease. First off, that lawsuit that one guy did on the course still is going on. So we haven't really had any information on what's going on there.
Yeah.
I have had several people that I would consider reliable sources that said that this course needs a lot of work if it's going to be on tour. So I don't know what the plan is over the next several months. I've had people that said they've played it not that long ago, and we'll see kind of what ends up happening with this. It was an interesting choice by them to have it here. I know Throwdown a Mountain has been a very popular tournament. People love the tournament, but with what they came out and said of like, hey, we're elevating these events. We want to make the events even better. I've just been told from some people, and so something to keep an eye on, that there needs to be a lot of work to this course.
I've never played it, so I can't have an opinion. But the opinion I've had from other people who have played it say it's an amazing course.
Yeah, I think they're talking more about like the infrastructure, and like it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. I don't think they had tee pads. I think they were putting like carpet down kind of over roots and stuff. I've never played it. These are all things. You guys can let us know what your thoughts are on it, but we'll see. I'm sure Paul and Dylan will figure it out and get it ready to go, and I'm sure the Disc Golf Pro Tour will get it to where it needs to be, but that's just where the season is starting. And I'm curious what events maybe you have. These are the events that I'm sad to see go. Las Vegas Challenge. Also, they had no idea that they were dropped,
yeah.
Which I'm not really quite sure how the heck the ball was dropped there. Last I saw, it still said on their website that they were the host of the 2024 Las Vegas Challenge. Maybe they still are going to be doing it. It just won't be on the tour this year. So that tournament, I'm going to be sad to see, because say what you want about it, it's still a good tournament. Whatever. All right. New World Championship. I loved it out there. Sad to see that go. Blue Ridge Championship. Same thing. Loved it. And the Kansas City Wide Open. I think the people of Kansas City, like, showed up for that tournament.
Yeah.
And we're basically saying, hey, don't make us have to go to DDO Emporia, Kansas to see a disc golf pro tour. Come here. We've got a community. We've got people that want to see disc golf here. Come here. And I thought they did a great job. Sad to see that not coming back. And maybe a different course, whatever. I feel like Kansas City kind of deserved one after how they showed out for that silver event. Anything that you're kind of sad? Tournaments are sad to see.
I actually like the tour. I liked it starting in Florida. I was never a big fan of the Las Vegas Challenge.
Yeah, it was very hit or miss for people.
And the reason is because of the practice schedule. It's a weird spot to be in because it had a lot of fans because a lot of people went there to play the tournament, a lot of amateurs.
Yes.
And so that's what made the fans come there, right? So there was huge galleries. There was a lot of support. Love that. But at what point are you sacrificing, like, other parts of, you know, like, practice time? Like, they're always full. It was hard to get anywhere. There was parking situation was an absolute nightmare. I could go into it. Weather was always iffy. It snowed there before. Yeah. I believe it was cold before. It was super hot. It was windy. Courses, the end of a course was always good. I love that course. But playing all kinds of different variations of these of courses, I was never a big fan of. I always like the effort that Jaquan and everybody put into it. He ran a great event, especially hosting that many people. Mm-hmm. One thing I will say, the fact that they didn't know that they weren't going to be on the tour, that's awful.
Yeah,
that's tough. And I don't know the details, but that is a tough thing, and I feel for them because of the hard work that they all put in to that event. So I will say that.
Yeah, a little bit of a miss there. Yes. If those rumors are
correct.
True.
But I do like seeing it in Florida.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of starting down in Florida. I love that.
But that's a bummer because you moved to Vegas.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden.
Don't want to talk about it. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. There's three tournaments now in Texas. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Like I said, though, tune in next week, guys, to get full deep dive of
all of our thoughts. We'll have to do a little research with all that stuff and get some of our people to give us some more information on what exactly went on.
Lots of info to break down. Before you go, Yuli. We did talk about having these, I guess we're calling them midnight buzzes.
Yep.
Midnight, they're black buzzes for our audio listeners. With the Yuli Dark Horse, you can probably see it a lot better with the American flag stamp. Yuli actually was throwing these right before we got back to recording. Yeah, stable for a buzz. But they came out really nice. I really like how the stamp looks with,
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you put some stamps out there and certain ones don't really pop. This one does. We're going to be doing a live signing here on the ground. So if you're coming out to USDGC, head on over to the vending tent. We'll be under the Foundation Disc Golf vending tent at 6 p.m. I think is roughly around when me and Yuli will both be there. Yuli's got an early tee time. I have a late tee time. Yeah. So I should be done around then. I'm not sure. Again, these are very limited. So once they're gone, they are gone. So I don't know when the line will form. But we will not start doing it until me and Yuli are both there. So if my round takes longer than 3 hours and 50 minutes, I'm crossing my fingers that it does not. But if we do end up having super long rounds tomorrow, it might start at 6:15. Show up whenever you want. But those are dropping tomorrow, Thursday, at 6 o'clock at the Foundation Disc Golf tent over in the Vendor Village. All right, Yuli, you got a place to go?
I do. I got to get to the mandatory players meeting. So I have
mandatory
my
players
tomorrow.
Meeting. let me know how it goes. Thanks for
Hey, good luck this week, man.
Hey,
honestly.
You too, man.
Play
Ball
well.
Out.
Play well. And let's see us later on in the day for the rest of the day.
So. I would love that. Okay. I would love that. All right, bro.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right. To wrap up here, it'll just be me and Silas rolling in. Silas, throw the photo up. I got tagged in this picture. I got sent this picture. I got DM'd this picture. This is it's the doubles champions, I think is what it is. I'll say this. It was clever in the idea that you gave because a doubles championship, you gave something that like two people could use together. So that was clever. For our audio listeners, they are musical symbols, which don't even ask me, Silas, how to spell symbols. I looked it up. Very difficult word to spell. I would definitely get that word wrong 100 out of 100 times. But they went with a marching band trophy here with musical symbols. I'm currently retired from trophy rating. I would like to announce my retirement right now for trophy rating. I might come out of retirement, but as of right now, I am retired from trophy rating. I need a break. I feel like people are starting to troll me, and I can't handle it anymore. Okay, on to a little bit more of a serious matter. Kona Montgomery posted earlier this week, or I think it might have been even last week, that she has been diagnosed with thyroid cancer. She's been going through some health issues on and off this season. She's been trying to figure out exactly what's going on. I know she changed her diet. She was working on her working out, like doing everything she could, and it ended up being thyroid cancer, which absolutely is terrible news. And just thoughts and prayers out to her. So if you guys are listening and want to bounce over on her Instagram or something and give her some sort of cheerful comment or something, I know she would probably greatly appreciate that. So shout out to her and Colton as well. All right, a few listener questions here to wrap us up. We have this from Glory Glory Man United. I heard there might be a Tour Life meet and greet on Thursday. Is there a scheduled time or just after you finish your rounds? Well, my friend, I answered that already for you, but for those that are just tuning in or maybe you skipped to the listener questions, 6 p.m. Foundation Disc Golf. That's where it will be going down under the tent. So head on over there, and I'll probably be over there after all my rounds. So if you can't come out on Thursday, but you want to say what's up, I'm going to be over on the Foundation Disc Golf tent probably after all my rounds, as well as the entire crew. Hunter and Trevor are down here. I think, Silas, you're bouncing tomorrow, so you guys won't be able to see Silas. But Hunter and Trevor will be there. All Business Brad and Jason as well will be there. Next question here is from Lars. Lars says, pros and cons of tour card holders being allowed to participate on the qualifying tour. We talked a little bit about this, but the biggest con, because I don't really know, I mean, the pros would be you have a better field, so maybe more people tune in to watch, maybe more people show up to watch in person. I don't think that's a massive pro. The major con for this is you're creating a qualifying tour where you're trying to get people that can't play on the pro tour currently on the pro tour. I think that should be off limits to people that are already on the pro tour, similar to how other sports have pros not being able to compete in amateur events and so on and so forth. That makes a lot of sense to me. So we'll see kind of what they do there. G Money wants to know when we're having Nico on. Yes, Nico will be coming on. I think we're saving that one for an after season podcast. So look for that somewhere in the months or weeks leading or past the tour championship. We got one from C. Meads. Should they bring back Silver Series and have the top 10 in points get a tour card that would knock out the top, the last 10 spots of the people from the tour card staring? C. Meads, I think we have the same minds. I think that's a great idea, and exactly kind of what I mentioned before, having some people drop out and having some people jump in. I love that idea, refreshing kind of the bottom layer of players. Pat Prock, kind of skipping forward, but is Yuli going to treat the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship like it might be the last one he ever competes in? He's not here with us, so I'll do my best to answer for you, for him, Pat Prock. He's not done. He doesn't see this as, this is my last hurrah, this is my retirement season. He's not done by any means. He can still compete on a very high level. I don't see him finishing or stopping anytime soon. So I definitely don't think he's taking that as a, oh man, I'm going to live it up because I probably won't ever come back here. I think he probably thinks he will go back there next year. And honestly, quite frankly, he has a good chance of doing so. Tyler and Karen, I'd really love to hear your take on flight numbers, why it's a good or bad system, and how the industry could change it. Maybe a little info on why some runs are more stable than others. So flight numbers, biggest problem, biggest issue. Flight numbers are not consistent from manufacturer to manufacturer. So if you're trying to look at an overstable mid from one manufacturer and you're trying to compare it to another, there is no third party that you send a disc to and they determine your flight numbers. The manufacturers themselves do that. So you're going to have big differences between that. And then also I would say flight numbers are a good starting point because, like you said, some runs are more stable than others. Lots of factors go into that. I mean, heck, I've heard the humidity of when the disc was created on that day has an impact. I've heard how long you let disc sit and cool for has an impact. I heard the color of dye that you put into the disc has an impact. So there's all sorts of things that can impact the stableness or the overstability of certain runs. And for that, I think flight numbers you should use as a first indicator of where the disc or how the disc should react. And then nothing beats just going out to the field and actually throwing it yourself. Kendall Evans, say disc golf is on ESPN full-time in the future and there's an opportunity to have a show like PTI. Would you or Yuli retire your disc golf career to do the show full-time? The Stephen A. Smith of disc golf. I think the answer for me is no. I'm not going to be retiring from disc golf until I feel like I can't compete anymore. Once I feel like I can no longer compete at a high level, that's when I will stop playing in tournaments and focus solely on the media side, focus solely on trying to continue to build foundation disc golf. All right, I think I knocked through all of those. Again, shout out to our Tour Life crew that's listening. Thor Liam, Ronnie Baker, Jacob Warden are three captains that we have as of right now in the Tour Life crew. If you're interested, check it out in the link description down below on the YouTube side of things. What else we got? We talked about the disc signing. Appreciate everyone that has dropped reviews. We're at 551 reviews on Spotify, 142 on Apple. We're trying to get those numbers up. So our listeners, please check out the podcast over on Spotify and Apple. Drop us some reviews over there. And I'm excited, Silas. We have narrowed down the Tour Life job interviews to a very small number. I want to say we had like 50 or 60 something. We're down to a small number. If it's one of you, if you guys applied, be looking out in your email soon because we have the next stages of interviews, the interview process going through, and then the final stage will be putting them right here next to me on a mic and seeing how they do. So very excited about that. I don't think we got anything else, Silas. I got a tournament to play tomorrow, boys, so I'm going to go home, start preparing for that, maybe eat a frozen pizza with the guys over at their Airbnb. But this was a fun one. If you guys enjoyed us being on the grounds like this, let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is not going to be something that we're going to do all the time because Silas had to drive down here with all this equipment and do this. So shout out to Silas for doing that. But there is talks about doing a live in-person Tour Life. At a certain point, we're not going to sell tickets because that's ridiculous. If we do sell tickets, the only thing we would do is just like they would be like a placement thing. We're actually not going to sell them for money because I would love to just see how many people show up. I think that would be cool to do this show in person in front of a live audience. I don't know when that would be. Who knows? Maybe we'll have to wait until Worlds next year when it's in our backyard in Lynchburg, Virginia. But yes, that is it. That's a wrap. Thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in and watching us. Make sure you tune in and watch the USDGC live on the Disc Golf Network this year. No pay-per-view paywall. Well, there is one, but there's not like a separate one, I guess. So I guess it is, in a sense, behind one. But yeah, thanks to all of our guests. Let me try. Gannon Burr, thanks to Ezra Aderhold, thanks to AB, Adam Hammies, Gooseman. Thanks to everyone that stopped by and talked to us. We appreciate it all. Thanks to all you guys for listening as well. We appreciate all the support, and we'll see you guys next week.